This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. This week, a group of prominent never-Trump Republicans and conservatives announced that they will spend $50 million to defeat Donald Trump this fall. The group, which is called Republican Voters Against Trump, is hoping to appeal to voters who backed him in 2020, but might be persuaded not to in 2024 due to a variety of reasons, such as his participation in the January 6th insurrection. But how big a pool of voters is this really? Is it really possible to flip enough of them to make a real difference in the core battleground states? What really motivates these voters, and what's the best way to reach them? To get answers, we invited on Sarah Longwell, who runs Republican Voters Against Trump and regularly conducts focus groups to figure out what makes them tick. Welcome, Sarah.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Democratic strategists I talk to look at your effort, and their first question is, how big is this slice of voters? By this, I mean, what percentages of 2020 Trump voters are genuinely gettable in battlegrounds like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Georgia, and Nevada?
Yeah, well, so I look at it slightly differently than that, because to come up with that actual number is difficult. But here's what I know about the Republican Party. There is a 70-30 split that you see come up over and over again. So if you ask people, do you think the election was stolen? About 70% of Republicans say yes, about 30% say no. You ask, and many polls have done this recently, if Donald Trump is convicted of a crime, will you still vote for him? 70% say yes, about 30% say no. Nikki Haley is getting about 28%, 27% of self-ID'd Republicans, so not including independents and Democrats in the open primary states, but self-identified Republicans. She's getting roughly that same number. And so I've been using that 30% as a bit of a proxy for where the sort of move on from Trump vote is. Now, I want to acknowledge, though, that the 70% is a big chunk of the Republican Party. For all you math majors out there, it's well over half. But that 30% to me is what we have to work with. Now, there's undoubtedly a portion of that that is sort of Republican first and will never vote for a Democrat. And so even though they supported Nikki Haley, they'll go back to Trump. And then there's another part group. So we've been doing this campaign since 2020. We ran it again in 2022 with Republican voters against Carrie Lake and Republican voters against Herschel Walker. And we know that there's already a group of people who are identified as Republicans, but are still voting for Joe Biden, right? They made up the critical margin in 2020. And we know they were there significantly in 2022 because Republican turnout was actually higher than Democratic turnout. But the Democrats still won in key races because they were able to win over these right-leaning independents and soft GOP voters. So somewhere in there, though, and maybe it's 15 to 20%, it's unclear, but let's say it's 15%, are what we're going to call this election cycle, the double doubters or the double haters, or I like a pox on both their housers, but they are people who do not like Joe Biden or Donald Trump. And they are functionally Republicans. Like, the reason they don't like Joe Biden is because they're not Democrats and they disagree with most of his policy positions. But because these guys, the dynamic is so different this time, you've got two candidates who are roughly incumbents, and we haven't had that before. The question is, for a lot of these voters, is like, who do I hate more? Like, if I always make the joke that if we had a drinking game in the focus groups for whenever somebody said, one of the voters said, the lesser of two evils, like, we'd all be dead of alcohol poisoning so fast, because that's what swing voters say. They say, look, I'm going to have to vote for the lesser of two evils. And that is very much in the eye of the beholder, like what they think is more evil. And a lot of times it has to do with their priorities. But I think the reason that we do Republican voters against Trump and not Republican voters for Joe Biden is that this is really a negative campaign. It is about building not a pro-Joe Biden coalition, but an anti-Trump coalition.
Right. And I want to ask you about that because it seems like there's a bit of a double-edged sword, right? So if I hear you correctly, we have some proof of concept already. In 2022, the MAGA candidates like Carrie Lake and Blake Masters in Arizona, Tudor Dixon in Michigan, Herschel Walker, as you mentioned, in Georgia, they all went down. And it's clear, I think, that a small slice of independent and moderate or soft Republican voters were critical there. And you're targeting those. But on the one hand, you didn't have Trump on the ballot then, and now you do, right? So independent and moderate voters who don't like MAGA might be even more repelled. So that's good. But on the other, you have Biden on the ballot, and he's very unpopular. And the Dems who beat the MAGA candidates carved out in 2022 their own identities tailored to their states and separated themselves from Biden. And Biden can't do that himself. Isn't that a problem?
It is.
How do you get around that?
It is, man. Look, we are in a tougher situation than we were in 20 or in 22. We just right. are. And this is the reason that people are freaking out. And I don't blame them, because the stakes are really, really high. Donald Trump is running this time. You know, when he says he's running for retribution, I don't like quite know what that means, but I certainly know it's bad. And I know that all of the responsible people who were part of his first administration will be gone. Anybody who works for him this time is okay working for a guy who tried a coup and didn't engage in the peaceful transfer of power. So that right there, you know, scares the heck out of you. And look, if you gave me a magic wand, I would have had Joe Biden step down after the absolutely the overperformance in 2022, help be this bridge to the next generation. But that didn't happen. And so we are where we are. And I do think that Joe Biden has a few things going for him, or that are starting to go his way. So one of them is that the economy is just getting better and better. And I think the big struggle for Biden has been he's not a good enough communicator to tell people the good thing he's doing, and therefore he's been at a narrative disadvantage this whole time. I have a piece dropping in the Bulwark today. I'm not sure if it's up yet. And it's really about how Joe Biden needs to flood the zone with surrogates. You know, the Democratic Party actually has a really impressive bench right now. I think one of the reasons people are so frustrated it's Biden is because they're like, but look at Warnock and look at Whitmer and look at Josh Shapiro and all these governors, and then look at all these young women who ran in 2018 and won in swing districts. And this am I allowed to swear on your podcast?
Yes, absolutely. It's encouraged.
I get rip shit about the fact, like, Gavin Newsom's one of my least favorite politicians, but this dude is the only one doing the job, the hard work of running around defending Biden's record, going on offense, And so they need everybody to start doing that, because I think that their lack of communication, their lack of telling the positive story, and their lack of going on offense against Trump has been a real liability. And like, the reason that this campaign that we do is so important, but a lot of other campaigns are going to be too, is that you should never listen to anybody who says, well, we shouldn't focus on these voters, these swing voters. We should focus on Black voters, or we should focus on young voters. Let me tell you what, you are talking about 300,000 votes across six states. It's like the Pacino speech at the end of Any Given Sunday, right? You got to fight for the inches in front of your face. These are the margins everywhere, and you got to go get all of them. And because of the political realignment we've been seeing, the fact is one of the fastest areas of growth for Democrats has been these college-educated suburban white voters. And so you want to go get more of them, because they're reliable voters and they're in a lot of these swing states.
I think the savvier Democrats understand that there's a division of labor here, right? You guys go do your thing. Democrats will go do their thing with the base and with some of the more liberal college-educated voters. So Democrats all get that. I think there's an interesting paradox here, right? On the one hand, Trump was not on the ticket in 2022, right? And yet the candidates who lost were like really hyper MAGA without the virtues of Trump, the political virtues, right? And this is what I'm talking about. Like, I think in the eyes of a lot of these voters, and I want to know what your focus groups show about this, Trump kind of codes as more moderate than he should, right? Doug Mastriano, who ran for governor in Pennsylvania and got blown out, looks like a lunatic, right? Carrie Lake looks like a lunatic. Blake Masters a little less so, but pretty damn loony, right? But Trump, you know, these voters have been kind of conditioned to see what he says and does as shtick. You know, it's not serious. It's all a big show. It's all bombast. You know, he's the rich guy who tore up New York, right? And so when he kind of vows to pardon the insurrectionists or threatens to prosecute his opponents or what have you, a lot of this is received in that vein, right? It's a show. It's not real. It's performative. Is that what you pick up in your focus groups as well?
Yeah, that old saying, and these sayings are all old now because all of our observations about Trump are now like, they're getting to be a decade old. But the fact that voters take him seriously but not literally is like 100% true. And people like us take him literally but not seriously. Although I think we take him seriously now as the threat that he is. But, you know, as Charlie Sykes would always say at the Bulwark, a clown with a flamethrower still has a flamethrower. And that's how I always think that's a good way to think about Trump. But, you know, this it's interesting, this dynamic in 2022. So Trump does two things. He brings out people who only want to vote for him in these general elections, right? And a lot of them weren't there to help out these Republican candidates in 2022. They were very Trumpy candidates, but like without Trump on the ballot, you're just missing out on some of the turnout that he brings out. On the flip side, though, and I don't know how to measure this, I only know how to think. I think about it a little bit as a wash. Trump is also the biggest turnout mechanism for Democrats. And he also papers over some of the deep, deep divisions and rifts within the Democratic Party, right?
Like 100%.
So he's this gift to Dems. But he is also, there's a reason that Republicans do better when he is on the ticket, because he tends to, and this was the thing that happened in 2020. People forget this, but down ballot, the Republicans below him did way better than Donald Trump. Why did they do better than Donald Trump? They did better than Donald Trump because Republican voters didn't vote. There was a slice, a margin-making slice, who didn't vote for Trump at the top of the ticket, but voted Republican the rest of the way down because they didn't like Donald Trump, but they are Republicans. And there was a lot of that split ticket voting that happened in 2022, right? Like Warnock won, Kemp won. And they said no to Herschel Walker there in Georgia. And so I do think that there is, and I hear this all the time in the focus groups, I think there is a core slice of voters that are really important who consider themselves Republicans, who would vote Republican down ballot, but will never vote for Donald Trump. And this is what I hear in the focus groups, is that people say, look, after January 6th, because maybe there's this whole group that held their nose and voted for him twice. Like they were kind of waiting for the next thing to come along. But they were like, after January 6th, I would never vote for him again. And we hear more from these voters about January 6th and lies about the election than we do about, say, issues like abortion. And part of the reason is that, man, you are right. When it comes to both swingier voters and also certainly Trump voters, Trump codes as moderate. They think, and here's what they say about the abortion issue. They're like, I don't think Trump's anti-choice. He's paid for some abortions. Like they all, people say it in every group we ask about abortion. They just think they don't think of him as a sexually moral person at all. So they don't take him seriously that he's going to like ban abortions everywhere. He's not like Mike Pence or Mike Johnson. He's just not to them.
If you're tired of hearing ads, you can support the show by becoming a member. This week, listeners of the DSR Network shows can receive 25% off the membership price. In addition to an ad-free listening experience, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for selected podcasts, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, and early access to select podcasts. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code DSRNetwork, one word, to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code DSRNetwork. This offer is limited and will expire on Saturday, March 16th, so act now. And thank you very much for your support.
It's amazing, and he's out there openly boasting about appointing the justices who overturned Roe v. Wade. But of course, at the same time, he was, I hate to use the word savvy, but he is kind of savvy in a lot of ways, obviously. But
it's
he
like
was
a lizard brain. He has like this yeah, lizard sense.
A lizard survival sense, right?
Yeah. Trump, he has triangulated where he both has co-opted the party and also runs against the party. And part of it is, I got to just say, the celebrity thing remains the most underestimated piece about Donald Trump. I was doing a group of Black voters, and they voted for Clinton, Hillary Clinton. They voted for Joe Biden. Now they're leaning Trump. And most of them were going to vote for Trump. And we asked them about whether or not they thought, you know, Trump saying that his mugshot would help him attract Black voters, or the stuff he was saying about sneakers. And they did not think Trump was racist. It does not land. Now, they thought the Republican Party was racist, but not Trump. You know why? Because Trump was a celebrity with Black friends, and they saw him hanging out with other Black people. And this is true. It was interesting about the Black group. It sounded just like the white groups. Like it's not like there was something that they were saying that was different from what I hear from, you know, Trump voting. They were like, all these voters, they see Trump as being rich. They want to be rich too. And they're like, hey, I want a businessman who's going to make me prosperous, where I can prosper the way that he does. And I think he wants that for me. And they just, and that's what I hear from voters all the time when they say run it, run America like a business. They hear, because Trump, they spent time with him in his boardroom where he was this carefully curated television version of a businessman. And they think like, okay, yeah, that's what America wants. They want the guy who fired Gilbert Gottfried. And like, that's going to make America great again.
Yeah, I can, as somebody who grew up in New York and spent a fair amount of time there during Trump's kind of tabloid years, I can shed some light on this, right? He did a shitload of racist stuff, the Central Park Five and all the race baiting that he did with Al Sharpton and so forth. And yet, once again, it was perceived as he's just putting on a show for the tabloids, right? So there it is again. Let me ask you this. This is something Democrats are preoccupied with right now. I reported recently that some Democratic polling found that a lot of voters are not really aware of some of Trump's most explicit authoritarian threats, like the dictator for a day thing or the vague threat to terminate provisions of the Constitution. How does that map onto the types of voters you're reaching? Do you find in your focus groups that this kind of core demographic that you want is in some sense not really aware of the true gravity of the threats that have come out of Trump's own mouth?
100%. Here's one of the things, you know what has been helping Trump? But the poor media, I feel bad for the media because I think they can't win. We were all yelling at them 5 years ago. Why are you pumping this guy up? Why are you carrying everything he says live? Why are you showing him so often? It's just for your ratings. And now, if they're not, I'm like, you got to show this guy. You got to show how insane he is. You got to make sure voters understand, because him getting kicked off Twitter and going over to Truth Social where nobody sees his stuff, and then having the media sort of decide they're not really going to cover every insane tweet or every time he stands on a stage and talks about how Viktor Orban is the greatest man, which he does all the time. These things are crazy.
So it's often said among Democrats who are resistant to the idea that they should be more confrontational with Trump, that, oh, everybody knows that he's a lunatic. It's all baked in. The sexual assault stuff is baked in. The authoritarianism is baked in. I don't think it's baked in. I think it's new information. And you're a political operative, so you work with new information, and you know what new information really is. Isn't this stuff new information? Aren't the criminal charges new information? The sexual assault verdict, so forth?
So I would say it's somewhere in between. Okay, so it's not that it's new information and it's not exactly that it's baked in. It's that Trump's legal troubles, there's so many cases. This is when they talk about flooding the zone with shit, and this is not exactly what Steve Bannon meant when he said it. That's exactly what he was talking about. But this is the functional way that it works, which is the voters know that Trump is like under indictment for a lot of stuff. They may even know there's 91 counts of it. Like sometimes people say that. They have no idea how to tell the cases apart. Like very high info voters do, people who are like clocking, they're watching a lot of cable news or whatever. But most voters, they're like, I know he's in trouble, but I don't know for what, and I don't know which cases are which. So it becomes white noise for people. And so it's not that it's baked in and no one cares about it. It's that it's not teased out and made salient to them. And it also, because it doesn't have a connection to their life exactly, right? They're not like, well, how does Trump's court case where he paid off the porn star impact me? And so to them, it's like, it's again, tabloid fodder, as opposed to like when they talk about him, they're like, well, I care about what Trump's going to do for the economy. And so I do think that but I agree with you on, you have to make these issues salient so that they are more top of mind. Like this is when people say it's baked in and you're like, okay, well, so is Joe Biden's age, but like that doesn't stop you from talking about that nonstop. So like maybe we should focus on some of the more insane and like the specific though, insane things that Trump has said about being a dictator, or like the average voter doesn't know who Viktor Orban is, which is I think another thing that Democrats sometimes think, well, no one cares about this. And I'm like, it's not that no one cares. It's that you haven't contextualized this for people. Like, explain why Viktor Orban is an autocrat who has been terrible for his country, right? And then explain to them that Trump loves him. Like, it's not funny that Trump, calls the North Korea, the head of North Korea, like a great person. He's a murderous dictator. Putin is a murderous dictator. We are not engaging sufficiently with the gravity of what Trump is talking about and doing as it relates to things geopolitically and as it relates to things domestically. And we are allowing this to be weird politics as usual when it is so far from it. And so I think it's not exactly baked in, but I also think it's not exactly brand new information. It's that it's not crystal clear information, right? It's like a jumble of white noise of insanity coming at people.
It's a wicked problem. So it looks like some big Republican donors are behind some of the third party efforts, which look like they're designed to help Trump. So I wanted to ask, do you guys intend to solicit big contributions from major liberal donors? It seems like they'd have an incentive to put some money into peeling off centrist Republican voters from Trump, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, our current, we've raised, we have about $20 million in commitments. Our donors, they tend to be of the centrist mold. I would say even the ones that are sort of Democrats are the kinds of people who would have donated to Nikki Haley when she was running against Trump. So, but I want to talk about the No Labels thing. The No Labels people should stop funding No Labels and they should come fund us. Because unless you are trying to help Donald Trump, which is what No Labels is doing, you are not building a credible third party. You are not going to win an election. You are being suckered by Nancy Jacobson and Mark Penn into helping reelect Donald Trump. And the fact is, Larry Hogan has seen this. Joe Manchin understands this. Everybody who has been a potential candidate, even Nikki Haley and Liz Cheney, they all understand what would happen because, again, you're not building a pro-Joe Biden coalition. You're building an anti-Trump coalition in order to win this election and stop Trump. And anything that splits that coalition up, I don't care if it's RFK or a No Labels candidate, they split them. And so, look, our donors tend to be disproportionately disaffected Republicans like us, but they also include people across the political spectrum. And anybody who wants to help us beat Trump and who believes in our strategy and our messaging should give me a call.
One more question, Sarah, if I may. Yeah. I'm interested in how abortion figures into this. So we talked a lot about the sort of voters who were alienated by Carrie Lake and Doug Mastriano and all those kind of crazy MAGA candidates in 2022. But clearly, one of the things that is driving this type of voter to vote Democratic is Dobbs. And so do you think that that's right? Is that a motivator for this demographic that you're targeting? And how do you kind of work with that? Do you work that into the messaging or not? And if not, why not? Since it seems to be something that does drive these voters.
No, you absolutely work it into the messaging. So here's what I learned in 2022, listening to the voters, because like I said, we were in a lot of those races. And I move in the democracy kind of world. And so there's a lot of people who wanted to be like, people voted on democracy. And I had to be like, you know, wasn't really quite that. What you would hear from people, like Blake Masters is a good example, people would be like, you know what? That guy is super extreme on abortion. He says the election was stolen and he thinks the Unabomber is cool. You know? And so like what they were doing is they had a vision in their head of an extreme candidate who was too extreme for them to vote for a bunch of reasons, right? They kind of rolled into this ball of extremism. Herschel Walker, same. Carrie Lake, same. And Carrie Lake lost against one of the least charismatic politicians that was running that cycle, who ran one of the worst campaigns. So Carrie Lake, in a state that is still historically Republican, she lost because she told John McCain's voters to go pound sand. And they did. And Donald Trump's doing the same thing right now. He's saying, if you voted for Nikki Haley, you're permanently barred. If you like Mitt Romney, that rhino, we don't want you. And they're trying to sort of they're rebuilding a different coalition, right? He doesn't want... They're practicing the politics of subtraction. Democrats should practice the politics of addition and go grab these voters and bring them into their coalition.
What is that coalition that they're, this alternate MAGA coalition that they're trying to build? And will you emphasize heavily in your ads that Trump is basically saying to moderate Republicans, go screw yourself?
That's right. Yes. That is, we want to make sure that we know that you should take Trump at his word that he doesn't want you in the coalition. But I'm sorry, I didn't answer your question about Dobbs. And I do just want to say that we have not been hearing a lot about Dobbs. And this is true in the focus groups as well. People don't bring it up out of the gate. Like if you just say, how are things going in the country? They talk about the economy, they talk about immigration, they talk about crime. They don't talk about Dobbs. And this was true in 2022 as well. But when everybody started freaking out toward the end of 2022, being like, we're talking too much about Dobbs, we are leaning too hard on it, I was like, nope, that's not right. Keep talking about it. And the reason was, is that when you brought it up in a focus group, suddenly everybody had a very strong opinion. And the thing I love about focus groups is it's not just about counting people. It's you can see the urgency. And as soon as you brought it up and introduced it, the level of urgency from voters, especially women, but like both, they would be like, oh yeah, no, this really matters to me. And that said to me, you have to remind them. It's not the most top of mind. You have to remind them all day long. And so Democrats are going to have to prosecute a campaign against Trump. This is what campaigns are for. You got to hang those three Supreme Court justices around his neck. Don't just hear what I'm saying about the fact that Trump reads as a cultural moderate and give up on that. That would be a mistake. It means you got work to do, is what it means.
Right, exactly. Democrats can't get snowed by the punditry into shutting up about that issue. They've got to take it upon themselves to drive the Dobbs issue into the minds of voters relentlessly, right?
That's right. Go win narratives. Go on offense. Get a knife in your teeth. Democracy's at stake.
Well, Sarah Longwell, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Folks, don't miss two new pieces up at TNR.com. Timothy Noah on how Biden is daring Republicans to oppose his efforts to tax the rich, and Alex Shepard on Trump's contortions over TikTok. We'll see you all tomorrow. You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.